Thank you very much, Rabbi Schwebel. It's a bit of an unusual pleasure and experience for me speaking to the secular studies teachers. In my day, they used to call them the Goyish teachers. You know, there was the English principal, there was the Yiddish principal, and the Goyish principal. But it wasn't meant as any type of denigration, just that's the way they looked at the two studies. Today, I think it's appreciated in the yeshiva world the critical role and the importance of a secular studies staff, a general studies staff, especially when it's a staff that not only can teach the subjects that they are commissioned to teach, but that can contribute in many ways in influencing the lives of the students because of their own values, because of their own lifestyle, because of the commitments and the insights that they have into the broader picture of what's being taught in the yeshiva. And I think that that's certainly a very different world from what it used to be. I'm not going to say how many years ago. So it's a special privilege to address this group. I think that when I thought about what to say, and again, it's an unusual experience for me, the words that came to mind are addressing the unsung heroes. And I mean that the unsung part, I think, you're aware of. But the heroic part, maybe you're not as aware of. And that's what I really would like to speak about a little bit today. You know, it's true that the primary need for the yeshiva system is for the Torah studies, because otherwise there are options out there for secular studies. But what sometimes in that context we forget is that the ability to give that education under one roof, not to mention the ability to have like-minded teachers teaching in the secular department, is really a different world. In the world where, and there are still places in the world today, not that many, Baruch Hashem, where there isn't a combined yeshiva education available to students, and they have to go to public school, and then, or whatever school, private school, and then they have a few hours a day of Torah studies. It's a different world. The exposures, the types of friends, the negative attitudes, and the dangers that they're exposed to in the public school system, even in the best of the public schools. The worst of the public schools, you're talking about physical danger. The best of the public schools, you're talking about spiritual dangers, are very serious and very real. So we're very privileged in today's world to be able to combine the two together under one roof so they don't have to go out there, they don't have to be exposed. How much more so with a staff like this, where they're not only exposed to a positive environment, but they're exposed to a continuation and maybe even a role modeling of what their education in the morning is supposed to be like a few years hence when they look at their general studies teachers and see people living this lifestyle that they're being spoken about and taught about in the morning, and they see it in real life in action. And you know, there's a lot to be said about the inability of rabbinic figures to influence. Now, what do I mean? Rabbis can be very influential. In fact, the rabbi's job is to be influential. That's really what it's all about. But there's a certain gap. There's a certain distance, because, oh, you're into that stuff. Yeah. You don't know what we're living. You're not in the secular world. You're not in the general world. You're not in the business world. You don't know what's going on in the world. You're living in the ivory tower, and we find it difficult to relate to you. And sometimes it discredits the teachings of a rabbi, because one thing is for sure, If I believe that someone doesn't understand me, I really can't accept anything from him because he doesn't understand my world, he doesn't understand my feelings, he doesn't know who I am or where I'm coming from, and so what he says is irrelevant. So that's one gap that's there. And then, you know, there's besides that, there's this, well, you're this, it sounds a little funny because we're not all that either, but you're this holy person. You maybe the kids look at it that way. You're this, you know, this spiritual, on a spiritual high, and you're into this stuff, and we can't relate to that. But to see role models, secular people, people who are into the secular world, who are accomplished in the secular world, who have achieved in that world, and yet they too represent the values and the teachings and the lifestyle that we're trying to inculcate in the yeshiva. It is a very, very powerful supplement. In fact, in many cases, oftentimes it can do it potentially more practically in terms of implementing in a practical way the type of education that they're getting in the morning, even than that education itself. So I think that you people have a very, very strong and powerful role and a very strong and powerful influence. And role modeling that I can identify with is a much better role model than one who stands, let's say, on a pedestal. Maybe I'm exaggerating, you know, but the one who stands on a pedestal and I feel that that's too far remote for me. I can't identify, I can't model myself after that person. So I really think that we maybe don't appreciate enough the impact of a general studies staff like this that can have on a yeshiva education. But I think there are many other areas which you are also for sure influencing and which you can influence and can complement the Jewish studies department and the influence that they have. And one of them, I think, is in thinking. You know, Torah studies, Talmud studies, Gemara studies, are very much based on thinking, analysis. Even the Supreme Court oftentimes in their decisions refers to Talmudic analysis. It's like a classic type of, I think once I saw splitting the unsplit end of the hair, or like, you know, they talk about things like that, like, you know, deep, deep Talmudic analysis. And some kids, you know, get into it more, some get into it less, but thinking and analysis is a very critical part of our education, is a very critical part of our entire religious living and belief system. And I think as secular teachers, we have the opportunity to continue this and enhance this and show them how their education that they're getting in the morning is applicable to life. And that's critical. Because one of the things that we find in yeshiva students is, oh, I'm learning this Gemara, what does it have to do with life? And especially it's about an ox and about a this and about things that I don't know why, what are you doing? You know, and we hear this all the time. And of course, the truth of the matter is that the analysis, the process of analysis that they're learning is priceless. The ability to think. Many a sophisticated businessman will tell you that, give me a yeshiva bocher who learned Gemara for many years, I'll hire him sight unseen, I'll find a job for him because he knows how to think, and that's what I need most of my business. Now, you have the opportunity to show these kids that the thinking and the analysis that they learn is extremely helpful and applicable in their secular studies, in their general studies as well. And when you emphasize thinking, when you demand thinking, when you demand analysis, when you recognize analysis, when you sometimes even, I don't want to say criticize because that was part of my discussion this morning, you should not be in the business of criticizing kids and putting them down. But when you can show critically that, hey, that wasn't analyzed well, then you're showing that the skills that they learned in the Torah studies are practical and applicable to everyday studies, to what they're going to do in life, what they're going to do in college, what they're going to do in professions. And that's a very important message that enhances the learning in the morning, because they see a practical application in the afternoon. Imagine how many students would be in this yeshiva if there wasn't a general studies department. Anybody want to buy the building? That's it. They wouldn't be here. So you people are really... I hate to say it, it's not even nice, but don't quote me for the others. You're bringing them here, you know, because if not for you, they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be here. And if you didn't have a quality department, they probably also wouldn't be here. And if you weren't growing and enhancing the quality of your program, you'd probably be losing students all along the way to others that maybe are claiming or in reality providing a better type of an education. So what you're doing is really, you're participating directly in the Torah process, in the Torah development, in the Torah education of these young students, because of the critical ingredient that you bring to the table, which other than that, if not for that, they wouldn't be here at all. I think that there's also another role that a secular general studies teacher can play. Some people, some students, have difficulty developing relationships with their Judaic or rabbinic studies teachers. Like I mentioned before, maybe they're in a different world, they don't think they'll understand me, they're too religious for me, I can't confide in them. Many a time, an appropriate secular studies teacher has been able to forge a relationship, a bond, and an influence on a student. Many, many times. And sometimes, oftentimes, in a way that a religious or rabbinic teacher might not be able to do. So, and that today is a tremendous, tremendous thing, because ultimately what our students need today more than anything else is a positive relationship with a role model that they can relate to, that they can confide in, that they can feel comfortable with and confident in. And it could very well be that for a lot of these kids, that you people may be able to provide that service, that opportunity, which otherwise they would never have. I think that there's something else as well. You know, quality education is really a Jewish value. Now, secular education may not be a direct part of Judaism, but quality education, taking things seriously, learning to be responsible, learning study habits, learning to think analytically even beyond what they may be learning, learning responsibility to prepare assignments and homework and reports and to study for tests. And these are values of life. These are critical values that they need. They need to succeed. And these are values that they may relate to receiving better here than any place else for the following reason. Most of your students here do not perceive why what they study in the religious studies is going to help them in college, is going to help them in profession, is going to help them get a job. They don't see that because it's not directly related. What you do is directly related. They know that I got to learn how to, I don't know, reading, writing, arithmetic. I don't know what they teach in schools, but you know, you got to have this. Otherwise, you can't go on to high school. Otherwise, you can't do anything in this world. And therefore, you have the captive audience, so to speak, that's more willing and more ready to develop the skills that are needed to succeed academically because of the academic motivation that they realize, and I dare say their parents second that motion, if not first it, that this is really what they need for life. And therefore, you're providing this critical need, serving this critical need, and providing them with tools for education that they may not be motivated enough in the religious studies department to even put their minds and their hearts and their focus and their attention to be able to develop. And I think that, too, is a very, very critical role that you people play. But I'd like to take this now to a whole different level of discussion. And what I would like to point out is the schus, the merit that we have for participating in a Torah education, for facilitating a Torah education. And for fear of being misunderstood, and the misunderstanding could be great, but I'm going to take a chance and share this with you anyway. Please don't misunderstand me, and don't anybody be offended. Boy, do I got guts. Listen to this. You're worried there. You're worried. The worst they could do is throw apples, you know. Don't worry about it. Oh, they'll get you tomorrow, but me, I'm out of here. Anyway, so
they won't wait
until tomorrow. Wow. There's a Gemara that tells the following story. There were two neighbors, I guess, and one was Jewish and one was not a Jew. And the Jewish neighbor sold an ox to his non-Jewish neighbor. And this was an ox to work the fields. Strong as an ox, you know, and really did a great job. Came Shabbos, the ox refused to work. Doesn't work on Shabbos. But he couldn't. He beat him and he kicked him and he couldn't get him to work. And he was fuming. He says, "What kind of an ox did you give me? A lazy thing. He worked for 6 days. He did a great job. I want my money." Goes to his Jewish neighbor in the middle of his Suda Shabbos. And he says to him, "Give me my money back, this ox." He says, "Wait a minute." He says, "I'll take care of the situation." He goes over to him. He says, let me talk to him. Yeah. He goes over to the ox. And he whispers into his ear. And he says to him, it says, "Shesh yom tavod v'sisakol machtecho lo itase kol malocho ato bincho itechlo abicho avamoscho ubehemtecho." That's what Torah says. You're not allowed to do malocha. Even the behemoth, even the ox of a Jew, is not allowed to do malocha on Shabbos. And he says to him as follows, "When you belong to me, you weren't allowed to do malocha on Shabbos. Okay? Now that you belong to my Gentile neighbor, you're permitted to do malocha on Shabbos." And the ox jumped up and he starts to work just as he did the other days. The goy was so impressed by this occurrence that he decided he wants to convert to Judaism and he became a Dan Tzedek. Fine, very nice. He was given the name Chanina Bar Turo, Chanina, the son of the ox. What's the son of the ox? What kind of a compliment is that? Not as bad as the compliment I'm insinuating here in a moment, but you'll see. Yeah. That says, in other words, this ox, I'm waiting for the apples, this ox had a positive influence on this person. This is what was responsible for him coming to Judaism. And therefore, it's considered as if he gave birth to him. This is considered his father. He gets credit for everything that this Ger Tzedek is going to do because it was his stubbornness and refusing to work on Shabbos, and yet his obedience when he heard that he was allowed to work on Shabbos, and that's what made the Hashpah, that's what created this influence on this this goy to become a ger tzedek, and therefore he is credited with giving birth to him, bringing him into life. Here goes. You didn't get it already. Anyone who has even an indirect impact, the ox part is irrelevant, so please don't pay attention to it. Even an indirect impact on the Torah growth of another Jew is considered as if he gave birth to him. It's as if what Avraham Avinu said, the Torah says about him, as hanefesh asher osu b'choron. Avraham Avinu was accredited with creating lives because he brought them tachas kanfei hashchina, because he had that influence on them, because they came and he introduced them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and because of that, it was considered nefesh asher osu. I believe that you people are in that position too. The position of Avraham Avinu and Sora, not of the ox. But that any influence that we have in someone's Torah growth, in their life, in their adapting a Torah lifestyle, then we get the credit as if we brought them into the world. These become like our children. The Torah considers that as if I gave birth to these people because I participated in the process, and the participation could be complete, or it could be partial and almost incidental, as it was, or just a little bit inspirational, as it was in the case of the ox. And what that, I think, really means is that we cannot, we should not, you should not underestimate the schus, the merit, the mitzvah that you have, the impact that you have by participating in a Torah educational system. Don't just look at yourselves as the general studies teachers. You're part of the birthing of these students. You're part of the creating of a new dynamic and hopefully passionate generation of Jews that are going to carry the torch that started 3,329 years ago at Har Sinai, and really before that, 4,000 years ago with Avraham Avinu, have to carry it on to the next generation. And I think that it's very important that you look at yourselves as such, because if you do, then you'll truly appreciate what you're doing. And if you do, then the fact that everybody else may not appreciate you as much won't bother you, because we know the truth. We know what we're doing. We know that we're complementing the education that they're getting. We know that for some of these kids, we're giving them what others in the other department couldn't give them. We know that we are participating in a critical way, as we mentioned before, because without us, they wouldn't be here. So we are full partners in what's developing, in what's happening. Look, you know, in a marriage, it's really the same thing too. If there's a division of labor, this may even be worse than calling somebody an ox, is to talk about the responsibilities of men versus women. So I better be careful. But you know, if there's a division of labor, let's say the man belongs in the kitchen, the woman belongs working, something like that. So then it's an equal partnership. It's an equal partnership. It's both our account. It's both credit to all of us. But each one has their distinct roles. That's the way we have to look at it. We have to look at it as parents, as a mother and a father, as choose which one you want to be. But it's that, and the result is a partnership. And we have to look at, you have to look at yourselves as full partners in the development, in the Torah, in the Jewish, in the religious development of these students, because you do play a critical role. All this having been said, if I may revert back to my normal role in the things that I do, just a couple of pieces of advice. Okay? A couple of pieces of advice. Okay? So just a few pieces of advice. I'd like to just a few things. Number one, just to tell you a little story which I told the other group, and maybe we should all be on the same page. 20 years ago, I had the occasion to speak at one of our dinners, and I quoted a medrash, and I think it's Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Tetzaveh, the beginning, that says that the Klal Yisrael is compared to an olive. An olive has the most precious oil inside, but it's the hardest to access. You've got to beat it and stomp it and squeeze it and finally get that precious oil out. So too, that the Jew has greatness inside. But sometimes to get it out, it's very, very difficult. And somebody was a little bit impressed by this speech, so they painted a portrait. The portrait was of, well, it was a black beard at the time, but the smile was the same, with a talus covering my eyes, squeezing oil out of an olive. You know, symbolically like seeing the good in people. But someone came in today, hung it up in the office, and someone came in and said, why are your eyes covered with the talus? Like, what's that all about? Maybe the artist didn't want to paint an ugly face. So I said, I don't know. But I think maybe the answer is because if you really want to conceive the inner good in your students, you have to close your eyes and cover your eyes with a talus so you can't peek and just squeeze. If we look at the outside, if we look at the apparent, if we listen to the language, if we focus on the behavior, we may not perceive that greatness inside. And we have to access that greatness in order to access their accomplishments, in order to elevate their accomplishments, in order to motivate them, in order to believe in them, in order to develop and expand their connection to the learning, in order to make it a successful experience for everyone. So that's one piece of information. I guess it goes along with that. Don't see the bad. And sometimes you have to, I often say, the most important thing a teacher has to know is what not to see. Certain things you have not to see. Very important. Because when you see it, then you got to do something about it. And we all would have been better off, you know. So, and especially, don't look at the outside. Look at the inside, see it. Every one of our kids have so much precious, such beauty, such sincerity, such, and even intelligence. They're there, it's there. Find it, access it, it's different. They're all smart. They all have smarts. Some have different styles, some a little bit this, a little bit that, but find it, access it. Also, we have to realize that, and it's very hard in a classroom, but I like to say, you know, people say one size doesn't fit all. I like to say one size fits none. As much as possible, we have to try to individualize with students. Now, it's very hard in a class, but sometimes we could have a special assignment, we could have a little extra attention, we could have maybe a phone call after class or in the evening or something where somebody needs a little something, recommending of a tutor, recommending of counseling, but these are things that it's very important, and you know, the combined input of the religious studies and the general studies teachers can truly sometimes spot a real problem. And sometimes, if the problem only expresses it in one department and not the other, it's an opportunity to see, hey, what am I doing right, and what is this one doing wrong? It's a very important piece of information. Like the famous story that used to go around that the teachers had a meeting at the beginning of the year, and then it was after the first month or so, and this Rebbe is saying, wow, this kid, whoa, the best, and he's brilliant, and he's this, and he's that, and genius, he's so good. And the last year's teacher says, oh, no, what are you talking about? He's borderline retarded. This guy is no, you know, like, it can't, impossible. You're making a mistake. So he says, no, comment. He says, no, I'll prove it to you. It can't be. Let's go look at the records. So they go look at the records. He says, look, he has an 85 IQ. And the other Rebbe, this year's Rebbe, says, no, that's his locker number. You know, everything depends on the way we look at it. If we look at our students, that they have the potential. I'll never forget one young man who grew up in not far from this neighborhood. The most challenging I've ever experienced. And after about 6 months, he started shaping up. And I asked him, I said, what happened? He says, you did it. He says, I did it. I did nothing for you. So he says, no, you believed in me. Belief in a student can elevate a student, can elevate them beyond any potential that they would have had without that belief. And I think you people have this opportunity, both to the class and especially to the individuals, which is, I think, very, very important. I think we have to be very careful about showing respect for our students. First of all, respect makes people feel good about themselves. Respect, as was mentioned before, validates. When a person feels validated, he feels happy. That's what osher is. Ashrei is, was mentioned. And feels good about himself because I'm worthy. Respect makes me feel worthy. And it's interesting, and I did mention this morning as well, the Rambam says in Hilchos Talmud Torah that just as a student has to respect the teacher, so too does a teacher have to respect the student. And respect means we have to respect their time. Oh, I get 10 hours worth of homework tonight, but I have 14 other assignments. I don't care. My class, that's it, you know. That's not a respect of time. Respect their space. Respect their opinions. They have a right to ask a question. They have a right to have an opinion. Show them that that makes a difference, their opinion. Take the question seriously. Respect can elevate a person and make him so feel so good about himself. And more than that, respect makes me one of the most important people in this person's, in this child's life, because I make you feel good about yourself. Wow, I have influence. If sometimes the best way to control a class is by respecting them, because then you validated them, you made them feel good about themselves. And as long as we're talking about controlling about a class, maybe I'll just mention something. I mentioned it over there too. I have no royalties on this book whatsoever. It was probably published more than 40 years ago. It's called Assertive Discipline by Lee Cantor. Actually, I gave Rabbi Kassus, I gave one of the teachers to give him an abridged, like a 15-page review of it, synopsis, which I think is worthwhile to give out to everybody. It talks about discipline. And his basic thesis, amongst many other things, is, you know, it says teachers have certain rights and students have certain rights, and each one has to learn to respect each other, fine. But what I like about his thesis is he says we should have a certain amount of expectations in the classroom. And he suggests not more than 5. And consequences that are clearly known up front when you don't, when you violate this expectation. And what happens is that it minimizes the conflict. Because now, you know, if you do this, this is the consequence. So you chose it. We don't have to fight about it. I don't have to insult you. I don't have to say bad things about you, which is absolutely, when you insult a person, it's all over. You know, you put somebody down, you can forget about it. You lost him, her, and you lost the whole class as well. Because you had the audacity to insult my friend like that, it's all over. So, and besides everything else, that you give this person the sense of that, you know, this is it. It's there are natural consequences. In fact, I found in the Medrash that it says that that's the way we're supposed to view punishment in general. That it's the Medrash says punishment that comes is gives a marshal to a doctor who says, you're sick. If you eat this and this, you'll be healthy, you'll get well. If you eat this, you're going to die. So when the patient eats the inappropriate food, the doctor didn't kill that patient. The doctor gave him the option, and he chose the wrong consequence. So this is something also, it minimizes fighting. Anyway, I recommend reading that piece. And in conclusion, I would just like to say that one of the sad parts of teaching, maybe even one of the saddest parts of teaching, it's not the discipline, it's not the frustration, it's not even the pay, it's not the burdens and the extra work and the tension and the... I know I get paid very well over here, but anyway, but what I think it really is the inability to know the impact that we have had on students in the long run. If you could see the results, if there was some system where we could look up and see some chart that shows us, charts the development of students over the years, over 5 years and over 10 years, and to see the impact that I had directly on that student, that would elevate us, that would make us so motivated, that would make us feel so good, that would make us feel so appreciated. And it's true. Don't ever underestimate the long-range impact that we have. And the good news is that even if we never come to see it, and even sometimes if the students don't know it, it's not lost on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And He measures and He rewards for all of the good that we have done to us and to our children and to our grandchildren and for 2,000 generations to come. That's a long time. So Be'ez Hashem, Hashem should help. You should continue to be Matzliach. You should be very proud of the critical role that you serve in the development of these students. And Hashem should give you the strength to be able to continue, to be able to feel positive and optimistic about the future and positive about what you're doing, and know that you're full partners in the holy work that's being done to educate Jewish children, that they should continue in the way of Torah.